Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 214, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. And this is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. Of course, it is Tuesday, December 7th, 2021, World Trick Shot Day. We've all been waiting for it, folks.
Yeah.
It is finally here.
Nothing else happened on December 7th.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Did you have something? Right. National Cotton Candy Day.
Right. Was that date that'll live in infamy?
Oh, right. National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Someone has a birthday like today, and I was like, I said a day that will live in infamy, and it went straight over their head. I remember one of the first times I met them, and for ever since then, I secretly judged them for their lack of like historical recall.
Well, like, especially if it's your birthday, how do you not have that just at the top of mind?
Maybe that's how good a birthday they have. Like, they're able to completely block out everything. Just, it's like, it's my fucking day. I don't know what else happened.
Yeah, it's just a traveling parade of birthday cheer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Whoa, I shaved up there. Whoa. No more lip hair. Your kid's safe. I'm not a creep, I swear. Whoa, no more lip hair. And that is from Adam Dodd, and it will be the last mustache-based. I shaved a week ago. I think it's probably time to stop singing about my mustache.
Okay.
But thank you, Adam Dodd. Had to let that one out. Well done, sir. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
It's Miles Gray, the great lover of holiday films, a.k.a. Doobs McDuck, a.k.a. It's a Wonderful Leaf, a.k.a. How the Grinch Smokes Spliffage, a.k.a. Miracle Cron 420 Street, a.k.a. The Christmas Chronicles, a.k.a. Reefer Games, starring Bud Hashfleck and Chartreuse Therapon, Stoned Alone and Stoned Alone 2, based in New York.
Yes.
Shout out to Matt Dick, though, on Twitter.
Wow. Has there ever been, I'm assuming there's, Harold and Kumar, like, Christmas movie, right? There's one of those. Is there another? Did Cheech and Chong ever do a holiday movie?
Maybe they did. Generationally, I only know, like, the big hits for them. So if there was a deep cut Cheech and Chong, my apologies.
Yeah. Seems like holiday-themed, like the way that great music artists all have their holiday album, or not so great, you know. A lot of it seems like all directors should do a spin on their normal movie. We should have a Kubrick Christmas movie. Everybody
like
should get that.
Yeah, because if artists and their management are allowed to do these blatant cash grabs of being like, hey, you know who needs a fucking Christmas album? 98 right. Degrees. No, they don't, but they want to sell some records. Then, like, get fucking Denis Villeneuve to be like, okay, do a Christmas movie right now. Sicario Christmas.
Yeah, just make them all Lifetime or Hallmark Channel. They don't
just
have to be
service.
Anything special. Yeah. Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a voiceover artist, actor, and musician who you can hear as Mateo on Rom-Com Pod Season 1 in his internationally acclaimed South Asian American punk band, The Kominas. And that they've been featured in, I don't know, Rolling Stone,
Heard
Guardian, Paper,
Heard
CNN,
that.
Mike, and, no big deal. You can also hear him as the host of the acclaimed podcast King of the World, which is a 7-part podcast about his journey as a Pakistani-American Muslim teenager coming of age post 9/11. Please welcome the brilliant and talented Shah Jahan Khan.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here, guys. As I was mentioning, I think before we started recording, from the floor of my parents' bedroom.
Yeah.
Northern Massachusetts.
But they have a beautiful bedspread. So.
Yeah. I believe my mom, put this thing together herself. So here we are.
Nice. I'd love to see it. Love to
and
see
I fumbled
it.
The pronunciation. It's Khan, right?
Khan. Yeah. Like, you got some. Something stuck in your throat there.
There it is.
Did you grow up in Massachusetts?
I did, actually. Yeah. My parents have been here since the mid-70s. I came rolling around in the early 80s. And I grew up, I was born in Boston, but grew up in a extremely boring suburb called Boxborough, Massachusetts. Boxborough with a B, not Foxborough,
right.
Where the Patriots that I don't give a shit about play football. But yeah, Boxborough with a B.
Boxborough.
Yeah. I'm one of the rare, I guess I want to say not that rare, but I guess rare Bostonians that really doesn't care much about sports. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, so you don't have any Celtic pride, Red Sox
zero.
Pride? Just like
zero, or, man.
Are you just generally not interested in sports? Because I see that also being a reason why you're like, no.
Yeah,
the
basically. I mean, my mom tells this story on the first episode of my show, The Show King of the World, where she's like, you know, it's a very serious conversation about like growing up in a very white town and stuff. And she was like, you know, it was a very high pressure environment. Our school mascot was like literally called the Colonials. Like that was okay. The name of the whatever football hockey team. But mm-hmm. Yeah, she was like desperate for me to get into sports. I started figure skating and I kind of wish I had stuck with figure skating, but that was really the only thing I was like, all right at. I was like, not, I did soccer and track, you know, kind of like you sort of do them because you're supposed to.
Right.
But yeah.
Man, figure skating really... is such a, like, that's just such a translatable, like, thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
When I see people who have a background in hockey or skating, like when they get out on a rink, like there just something comes over them. It's like, yep.
It's
like
funny,
when you see a bird that really enjoys flying and they're just like, you know,
yeah.
It's just like, yo, they really like they go
Dude,
to another
I was,
place.
I was pretty good, but you know, it's like, I think about that a lot. And I feel like the reason I didn't continue with it, if I'm honest, was probably homophobia at a young
right.
age. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, because it was like me and maybe one other guy at the time in
right.
the team. And, you know, all the like, kids in Acton and Boxborough, like whatever it was, like hockey. And if you weren't into hockey,
right?
I was a frail young mushroom haircutted Pakistani teenager, so I wasn't really gonna be
nice.
Playing hockey.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I tried to like collect the hockey pucks in the rink to like pretend that, you know.
Right.
But
like I'm out here
it.
Guys
yeah.
again
yeah.
Are you wait, but when you get on a rink, do you have to get free like Jack's talking about? Like, I need to feel the wind on my
it's
face.
It's funny
right
you
now.
Mentioned that. I didn't go for a long time. And then I think maybe 5 years ago, my wife Lauren and I, we went. You can skate like in downtown Boston at like the outdoor frog pond in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that once. And then there's also like a rink by our house. And when you don't do it for like 20, 30 years or whatever, like it requires some balance and core strength, but it definitely came back to me. Like I was
right.
able to like, I think like in that first hour, like start skating backwards and stuff. And at the time there was actually like a group of 15 or 16 year old, whatever, like hockey figure skating stars doing all the like axles and shit, like all around us. So
right.
we were just
wow.
trying to like hobble, you know, like around
right.
the thing without falling. So
it did
come back to me though.
Yeah,
I like to think my life could have taken a different turn. For sure.
I grew up playing hockey. And
yeah.
again, I was just a bizarre black and Asian kid in the late 80s with a mushroom
yeah.
haircut at a certain point.
Okay. You know, was it a middle part?
Oh, hell yeah. Because it
oh,
was
yeah,
like
yeah.
a surfer, you know, because a surfer dude happened. But then my mom wouldn't take me to get a haircut. So then that turned into some other shit, like after a few months with no haircut. But, you know, with being on the ice, like every time I go to like someone's like roller skating party or like ice
yeah.
skating party, half the time I ignore everyone just to skate as hard as I can to remember
wow.
like, come on, little legs, do
just
what
that,
you know. You
get those
no,
memories.
I know you know how to
back.
Do this. Yeah.
Damn. I wish hockey did have, I would probably watch hockey if it incorporated like axles and double axles and shit. Like
it's,
if that's how
the
they
funny
like,
thing
wind
about
it up
my,
for
my wife. The only sport she actually, she's like a punk rock neuroscientist,
oh, yeah.
but she likes hockey. That's like the one sport she's like super into.
Is she from like New England as well?
So she's from Nashua, New Hampshire.
Got it.
So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
New yeah, Hampshire. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I took my kids to a, like, it's kind of like a children's science museum over the weekend, and they had a skating rink set up for sock skating, which is just you take off your shoes and slide around on your socks.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you like attach a skate to like your bare foot or like sock. I was like, that's
yeah.
pretty,
that sounds
intense.
Way, but you had to pay to take off your shoes and slide around on a slippery floor.
Okay.
Which just made me feel very much like, damn, LA. This is,
right.
Is this what we've come to?
Yeah. I've heard of rooms that people pay hundreds of dollars in to sit and meditate to. You know,
that's
so,
true.
Yeah.
Wait,
very
could
true.
You actually skate though on that? Was it just or just a stupid, quirky name for a slippery ass floor?
Slippery ass floor. But I mean, people were having fun. Nobody was like, it just seemed like people were, you know, like sliding around. Nobody, you couldn't get up enough of a head of steam to like really
like break your arms. On
yeah,
was the night arm. Was the night called like Glide or something?
Yeah,
right.
That would be
a one night event.
All right. Well, we are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment.
All right. First, I hope you don't regret it.
No, can't wait. But first, we do want to tell our listeners a couple of things. We will be talking about a little later on. We're going to talk. We're going to do an Omicron update because initial numbers show that it might be less severe, which is something we were talking about last week. We're going to talk about Islamophobia in Washington, D.C. The Democrats seem unclear on how to handle it. We're going to talk about, there's just this NBC News headline that I'm just going to read. If Roe is gutted, Democrats are unlikely to make it law, but they'll run on it. So just wanted to check in with that being the current Fighting state spirit. Of the Democratic Party. We're going to talk about how San Francisco suspended tax on cannabis to help dispensaries compete with the good old-fashioned drug dealers. And we'll talk about using Santa Claus to promote guns. It's a long and storied tradition, shockingly. So we will talk about that. All of that and plenty more. But before we get to any of that shit, Shah Jahan, we do like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
You know, I guess I can give a shout out to my a good friend of mine, Aruj Aftab. She's a Pakistani American singer who recently has been nominated for 2 Grammys. So okay. I just was Googling her latest whatever, you know, Pitchfork something said about her. That was very nice. Dope. So wow. Yeah, very I'm glad cool. It's not something more embarrassing. Like the thing that I did write down was the overrated, underrated. So I was like, I was going to say that raccoons are overrated because I was having this argument with somebody yesterday. So I guess like it's good that raccoons weren't in the search history there is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like you were searching a fellow internationally acclaimed recording artist. And
right.
I just, you know, Miles and I always talk about how, like, it's just good to have someone else who's internationally acclaimed on because sometimes we have a guest on who isn't internationally acclaimed like Miles and I are, and it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
Especially internationally acclaimed guests that are just like chilling in their parents' bedrooms.
Yeah.
So, like honestly, you could pass off the background, even though you are literally sitting with your back to your parents, but you could pass off that background as like a like fake background because it looks great.
It's the lighting. I've got 3 lights. I've got the natural light from the window over there happening. Yeah. So I take this shit seriously.
Absolutely.
What is something you think is overrated?
So overrated, I was saying, I think raccoons, because I was having this debate with some folks, was it yesterday or the day before? And they were trying to tell me that raccoons are cute and they're just rodents, right? They're rodents with like little hands and they're terrifying. So I think raccoons are overrated. It's a very New England appropriate topic, perhaps. I don't know. You guys have raccoons? You must have raccoons.
Oh, yeah. I see them always cruising at night, you know?
Yeah. Just,
like, there's one in my, like, near my neighborhood who walks with so much confidence, it's fucking scary.
Right.
Just, like, so slow, and, like, cars are, like, almost hitting, and it's always on the same street, like, around, like, later at night, and I'm like, here's that fucking punk-ass raccoon.
Punk-ass so raccoon. Tough.
Whatever the opposite of rocket raccoon is. It's like, slow, slow boat raccoon.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel, whenever I see videos of, like, people who have, like, 200 pet raccoons just chill with them. Part of me is like, I would like to be able to enter their world and maybe soften my stance rather than being that tries to fight my cats.
I'm good.
Do you have some that are fucking with you right now? Like, are they
not currently? Well,
what's the root of this anger?
What I realized also that I was having trouble distinguishing for some reason during this particular argument about rodents between raccoons and skunks. But I think I hate both equally. I'm pretty sure there's a skunk that kind of roams around our street. We live on the coast in Boston, so near the airport on the beach. Yes, there are beaches in Massachusetts. They're probably not as nice as yours. But then at night, there's like raccoons like sound like little banshees, basically. And the first couple of times, like I didn't know that was a raccoon. I literally thought it was like a dying baby or I don't know. It was horrible.
Wow, so. Drew you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, bald raccoons are pretty scary looking. They're like little, I don't know if you've seen any of these pictures. No. Like a raccoon that has this parasite that robs it of its coat.
Oh, it looks like a hairless raccoon.
It's mushroom cut.
It looks like a hairless raccoon. Yeah. Well, it kind of looks like, its skin is like elephantine. And it's just a scare. Like its face is really like mean looking without the fuzzy wuzzies kind of hiding it back there.
Wow.
I'm not sleeping tonight.
Yeah. Check it out. Everybody Google it.
I will.
Search
bald raccoon.
Yeah, bald raccoon.
I just don't like the bald slander. You know what I mean? Like, why we got to go after the hair?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't all help it.
You know? I used to have a mushroom cut. Clearly, I don't right now. You can see.
I did too. But
all right, so you know.
The genetics robbed me, and now I'm some animal to be compared to a raccoon.
That's what I was getting at. I'm glad you guys took it. That's why I brought it up.
Oh, yeah. We weren't sure. Hey, guys, check out this link I just found to a bald raccoon. I'm going to send it to the chat. We click it. I'm like, this is my Twitter avatar, bro. What the fuck is this? And I'm not trying to make a terrible joke there.
Yeah. I mean, they are pretty, like, they can be tough to, because they have the opposable thumb, they can be tough to.
Oh, that's right.
And they're so fucking smart. Apparently, they're like, their capacity for problem solving memory like lasts for years.
Yeah.
So, really? Like, the second they figure out how to like open some shit or navigate some kind of obstacle, that shit is in a hard drive. And it's like, now, anytime they get in the same situation, it's like, bing, bing, bing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's probably why they're such a, you know, nuisance to a lot of people, is because of their hands and their memories.
Mm. I don't be up at night dreaming of this deviously intelligent bald raccoon tonight.
Right.
So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
In the lab.
What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated. Frozen kebabs from your parents' freezer.
Mm. Mm.
So my mom has this this dude at a local a Pakistani market who she buys like, I want to say 200 to 300 kebabs at a time from him. And she stores them in a freezer. So anytime we come over, she just gives us a bag of kebabs. So I had a couple before this podcast. Not going to lie, I was trying to think of what to talk about. And so I'll go with frozen kebabs.
Look, I love frozen food. I love kebabs. I like hearing the combination of words. Are they like pre-grilled or it's raw?
They are pre-made. Yeah, they're all
set. Oh, so you just heat them up.
You just throw them in the microwave for 30, or you can even like broil them or something, but they're fantastic.
They retain their moisture?
These are like chicken kebabs, like chicken tandoori kind of kebabs. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. For a place called Punjabi Grill.
I love it.
In Framingham, Massachusetts. Shout out, Uncle.
Envisioning 300 at once. How long does that last? Like, how many kebabs per meal per person are you thinking with this?
It depends how often I come over to get them. You mean like at my parents' house?
Or just in general, like if you had 300 on ice, how long would that last you if you were regularly, you know?
In our fridge, if me and Lauren are having those kebabs, they're not going to last very long. I mean, we probably, like, we don't have space for the, you know, we live in for like a one floor, you know, so we maybe grab, I would say, 10 to 20 at a time. But they're so good, and they're such a perfect pre or post pretty much anything food, and they're like pretty healthy,
right?
So I'm gonna go ahead and say maybe like 3 to 4 days tops.
Oof.
Yeah.
Damn,
love it.
Get it.
Yeah.
I should say this is kind of a belated sort of update, but we talked a lot a while back. Miles, I think you talked mostly about the air fryer being a good addition. The air fryer has changed.
Someone else did, but I voiced my interest in it. I'm air curious.
Okay. We did get an air fryer in the past few months, and its ability to bring frozen foods of all sorts back to life is pretty incredible.
Really. I've heard some incredible things about French fries and chicken wings also.
Yeah.
I also don't have an air fryer.
Frozen chicken nuggets are
like all I eat now.
Yeah, it's basically the.
How many kids do you have?
None.
Two.
None.
Just none.
I love the dinosaur shaped ones though. Those are so bomb.
Yummy. Yum yum. Yeah.
Shout out to the dino nuggets.
When that mom talked about going through 8 gallons of milk a week, I think it was actually more than that. I was like, oh, Just like that sounds excessive, but don't ask me about frozen chicken nuggets because we're putting up numbers on those.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, man.
You're just starting to feed your kids like in like Tiger King, like just throwing shit on the back of like a fucking tractor trailer, like here, just fucking have at it.
It's well, just, if you ever find yourself in Framingham, Massachusetts, you walk in there and look for Azhar Uncle and be like, "Yo, Shah Jahan told me about these these chicken kebabs."
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. So I can drop that name. You're comfortable with that?
You can, 100%.
Okay.
Actually, great. You know what? You should probably drop my mom's name, Tina, because she's the real celebrity.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, shout out Tina. Okay.
Shout out Tina.
Yeah.
I wonder if our listeners who live in that area, they're gonna go and like, "Yeah, dude, shout out Tina. She sent me here."
They're
like, "What?" He's like giving her all these kebabs. Like, "Yo, thank you for all the business." Like,
oh, I forgot to mention, you'll have to pay for them.
Yeah,
he's gonna give them for free.
No, not at all. Right. Not at all.
He might give you like a free sample.
No, hell no. I don't expect any real business owner to be like, "Oh, Tina, here's free food," but be like, "Damn, Tina, okay, keep sending these."
He is a very sweet man, though, so you never know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He goes broke. He's like, "Tina, you know I can't say no when you send people here." Like, completed me dry.
Well, don't put him out of business. Like,
yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And all right, let's talk quick Omicron update. The newest flavor of the coronavirus is here. It is spreading rapidly. We talked last week about how the thing that everybody was keeping their eye on were the initial reports from the hospitals, right? Because so we knew it spread very fast, like faster than the Delta variant, which spread faster than the original. And so everybody was kind of watching with bated breath to see what the initial reports were from the hospitals. And, you know, fortunately, they are following the path that we were hoping they would, like where a lot of viruses evolve to become more spreadable, but less like intense and less deadly, because that is actually better for the life of the virus, because if it doesn't knock you down or kill you, then it's able to be passed on to more people. So the initial findings were that it was very widespread based on the wastewater sample, which is gross, but, you know, shout out to whoever did that work because it was crucial. But now the hospitals are reporting that the hospitalization rates are lower, the intensity and, you know, length of stays is shorter, fewer people are dying. There was a very worrying report especially for people with young children, that it was spreading, like they were seeing way more pediatric COVID units, seeing patients. There's been no deaths in those pediatric units. So the initial indications are that it might be a less intense strain, which is great news, but also we're waiting to see, because COVID has proven to be unpredictable and brutal.
There still needs to be time to really fully see, like, you know, how much we see from hospitalization, that time it takes from infection to hospitalization to then potentially death. But I mean, I think all the like epidemiologists are like, it's what we're seeing is good, but I'm not saying fucking relax yet, because at the end of the day, the plan is going to be the same no matter how bad this variant is, which is be vaccinated and do as much as you can to keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, you know, and I think the big worry now is that even though we're talking about Omicron, is that Delta is still the prevailing variant that's infecting Americans as we go into the winter, and there's going to be another surge, and they're just saying, don't keep your guard down still. It's still the same thing. And, you know, when you look at how much of a percentage of Americans that are still unvaccinated, like that still means millions of people as potential vectors and networks for infection to keep happening. So, still ongoing, but at least the first things aren't just abject screams of horror coming out of these other places.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. Like, there are millions of possible scenarios, many, 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 many of them were very bad, and this suggests that we might have avoided some of the worst ones with this very specific variant.
Right.
But yeah, the publicity around the Omicron variant did seem to lead to a spike in people seeking the vaccine. So if we can keep that going. If you're somehow a listener of this podcast and haven't gotten the vaccine yet, ignore what we just said. Don't let that dissuade you. Go get the fucking vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using anecdotal evidence in a pandemic isn't the best analysis method. That, because I think a lot of people who are hesitant but would normally do something that's good for their own safety will say things like, well, the people I know, like, we're fine.
Right.
And that's not the point. If they were fine, it's to be able to stop infections from happening. And if you are if you're vaccinated, then you can prevent, you know, the expanding infection rates.
Yeah. It's killed more Americans than every U.S. war combined. Like, that's like, so just try and get your head around that and still not take it seriously.
Yeah. But it's sad. It's still not going to happen, you know,
because
there was this recent study that happened that United States conservatives are the only conservative political group on earth who isn't like actively fighting against using masks. They're like, it's really strange. Like, even you go to other conservative political parties in other countries, they're not on like this, like, I'm not wearing no mask. It's like a very uniquely American conservative thing. We have a lot of uniquely American conservative problems.
Yeah, let's talk about another one, because I guess this isn't uniquely American, but there has been a lot of Islamophobia lately in Congress. Lauren Boebert's comments about Ilhan Omar over the Thanksgiving break have taken up a lot of attention, as, you know, Democrats are trying to figure out, like, what to do. Do they censure, remove her from committees, buy her a pink AR?
I listen. It's, you know, it's like, obviously, I'm not just piping up because I'm like a Muslim person, but like, I, you know, we've heard so many of these kinds of things before, but like, I found myself the other day in the car just playing the message, you know, of like whatever message was sent to Ilhan Omar. And it was just like, it just made me really sad, man, that it was like, and also, you know, obviously, because for the last year I've been working on this show and stuff, and we have like we talk about Islamophobia and stuff a lot, but yeah, it was just something about this one in particular where I was like, you know, it's still a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just so awful every time. And sometimes you get desensitized to it, but, you know, every now and then it just really kind of hits you there.
Well, I think if anything, Democrats have become desensitized to it
because
there's a lot of like, oh, what are we doing about Lauren Boebert? I think to most rational people, it's clear you address this bullshit and you do what you have to make her account for her recklessness and her hateful words. That's what you do. That's all it is, because that should be everyone's response to hearing something like that, is shutting it the fuck down rather than being like, well, you know, I don't want to make martyrs out of them or whatever. And you're hearing a lot of stuff from Democrats where they're saying, like, you know, the big problem here is they said they promised to retaliate if and when they regain control of the House in 2023. So, like, we got to be real careful here. And there have been Congress people who are like, that's the dumbest fucking excuse to say we won't do what's right out of fear for the reaction of the ignorant and small. Like, that's, if you're doing that, then what's the point of any kind of leadership? And I think the other thing, too, is like the GOP also knows that keeping this kind of stuff in the headlines helps to completely derail any kind of agenda, because every week the headlines have to be talking about how racist or hateful the GOP is this week, rather than like, hey, we have huge problems with income inequality, with access to health care, with all these other things that should be getting American people's attention for them to have, again, because we have no imagination for anything, to get people to realize there are potential benefits if, you know, there are certain kinds of policies that can be passed. But yeah, at the moment, their calculus is, we don't know how they're going to respond. We're afraid that if they get power, then they're going to use it against us, or this idea that we can't give them more attention to campaign off of. And I think what's hard is some Democrats, like I'm saying, have become desensitized, because one of them said that, you know, I don't know if we need to be removing her from committee assignments. He said, for me, the line for censure is if you're fomenting political violence. And I think the voicemail that Ilhan Omar played,
oh, it's legit,
is pretty clear what has happened, just in general, Lauren Boebert or not, or just the general tone of like the low hum of Islamophobia that's in the background of the country, that it is causing this kind of stuff. So it's, and then like they pivot to things like this. One said, it just needs to become a campaign issue in the midterms, just to point across the aisle and say, Americans, do you feel like this conference is ready to govern? That's an actual congressman saying that the strategy is just to be like, we've joked about this, just gesturing across the aisle as a campaign platform rather than leading, rather than introducing ideas or trying to create something, you know, tangible.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's just interesting to think about the conservative party in America being unique and what has allowed them to be unique. And I think it's the lack of an option that is holding them accountable, right? Like they just control the entire agenda while the Democrats are happy to kind of eat off of them, you know, like yeah. just run as the not the Republicans option. And right. it's literally killing people.
Yeah. It's like using this thing in your mind comparatively where you're like, well, at least I'm not the worst student in class.
Yeah. And like, when there are only two students in class, like that, yeah. that's a very fucking dangerous.
Fucking
like,
better. Okay. Yeah. But like, that's like, yeah, I get straight D's, but this dude gets D's and F's, more F's than D's. So right. vote for me.
Yeah.
Huh? That's not going to do anything. And I think that's what's really just. It's really sad because you have a lot of members of Congress like Rashida Tlaib, who's also Muslim, and saying, "You, they've said they're going to, if they regain control, they do want to strip committee assignments from me because I don't back down from shit." And she said, "I'd rather get pulled from committee assignments and shut up because I'm not doing that." Right. And yet you still have a lot of Democratic leadership that's not really coming out here being unequivocal about how they're going to address this. And it just, you know, it makes you sad because you're sitting on the sidelines while someone's out here clearly articulating hate speech about another member of Congress.
Yeah. And I mean, our next story is basically the exact same story, but with regards to Roe. Like Roe's on the verge of being gutted under a government with a democratically controlled Congress and White House.
And Senate.
What's that?
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm so used to saying the full trinity of Congress just to keep showing them how much they control. Got the DOJ, the Senate.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I guess you could argue that Manchin is basically a fake Democrat and so they don't have the Senate. But,
right.
you know, Collins has said she supports encoding Roe as law, but we're not hearing about plans to work with her to nuke the filibuster to protect Roe. They are instead talking about letting them gut Roe and then letting people die and then running on that. That is the strategy, you know. People will die because of this. It is yeah. wildly unpopular politically to gut Roe, but they will not do the thing that they could be fighting to do because it's too good for fundraising.
But
basically.
That's the thing. I don't know if it is, right? It's, I mean, I know that on a like a sensational level, like it's, you can be like, we got to do something, but more and more people are getting very frustrated too to say like, well, what are you doing? Rather than just saying like, they're going to gut Roe v. Wade. We're controlling both chambers, kind of, and the White House. What are we going to do? And I don't know. Like, it's just more disheartening, I guess, for me. But I know I'm more politically engaged than the average person. But to see that and to try and trade off of that seems like not the best way to demonstrate like why you're going to like lead things well without at least showing some effort to do that first. Like, it almost seems like, we'll just throw our hands up and then campaign off of that because it is bad, but let's not put it in people's minds that we might be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and also just like, and this, like the last story is about our like Islamophobia in this country. And this one's just about just patriarchy and misogyny and yeah. like completely unable to even like articulate that in the coverage around all of this. Like right. it's very just turned into horse race talk again, like on the news.
Yeah. No, I think the Democratic Party is like in a death spiral. I think the Democratic Party is in the worst shape it's ever been in. I truly do. I believe that while they have the president and both houses of Congress, because like they ran as much as they could on like being the alternative. And now they're the alternative. They're not doing anything other than gesturing to the other side. Like, people can't ignore that. And I think they're just locked into this losing strategy because that's how the people who are in power came to power. That's right. All they know. And there's also this buffer of an entire industry of political strategists and political advisors who are based on understanding like fundraising and all this bullshit. So they are entrenched and they are a hive mind of really intelligent people working to make sure that the politicians, the Democratic Party, doesn't realize this and doesn't like understand the danger of like this current strategy.
Mm.
So
yeah, like just, you know, just like how Republicans, they have like an evolved, accelerated evolution because they're doubling down on like their worst thing, which is just like hate, you know, like at the end of the day, like that's what it was all about. And with a lot of Democrats, their whole thing has been not really solving shit ever. Right. So doubling down on that is just leading to like more this like diffuse, weird, confused, like where's the line with Islamophobia? Where's the line with reproductive rights or human rights and things like that? And they're just fighting like, and they scratch their heads looking at polling numbers, just like crater,
right?
Rather than knowing that there's like an omni, like there's it, we're experiencing an omni crisis. Just fucking pick one thing to start doing
to lead,
and
on.
People be like, hey, that's doing something.
Whoa. Wait a second.
Yeah.
What the hell is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
For some reason, I just had a flashback to the first season of Handmaid's Tale, you know, which part of it like takes place in Massachusetts also, but just kind of like watching that and thinking about, you know, knowing that these things have been in place for so long that there have been, you know, little efforts to chip away at this kind of stuff and seeing it in a way like come to life, like you guys said before, our very eyes is not the greatest feeling.
Yeah. And it makes you feel really uneasy when you have a supposed party who's like, you know, oppositionally or maybe ideologically opposed to it. And
for
they're
sure.
just watching the tidal wave come in and like not even saying anything. And
yeah, I think, like because, you know, I think traditionally it's been like the party of like the good and the right and or, you know,
right.
at least
it's the party current. Of like not upsetting the dinner table with a hot take.
Right.
And then unfortunately, we're in the worst situation where we need people to speak up and it's just crickets.
Yeah.
And I think that's why The Atlantic this week has like put out a huge sort of series of articles about like, hello, fucking democracy's about to get just skull fucked by the amount of partisans that are being put into electoral board positions for the Republicans to be able to do their very like clearly articulated plan, which is to negate election results that they don't like. And like Joe Biden's been like, oh, man, that's scary. Like, oh, what?
Sir. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Handmaid's Tale. We talk about that, particularly season one, a lot because that's the season that's actually based on the Margaret Atwood book. And that book is a collage of details from historical like societies, how historical societies have oppressed women. It's not like some far-fetched imagining. She's said like, no, I just did research on how history has done this and used that to build a scenario in North America, basically.
Yeah. No, I think the thing I liked the most about it was the three kind of time periods that they were sort of seamlessly going between, you know, as far as like, you know, this is what shit was like before, right before shit got like really fucked up. And now we're here in the present. And And it's like, yeah, it's like not that far from where we're at.
I don't, it's weird that like, I wonder if he was like, well, they wear clothes that are different than how we dress actually, that it just goes over like, fuck. Okay. So we can't even do metaphors or like very heavy handed ones for people to sort of get the picture.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, like, that's why it's, we keep finding ourselves in a position where a lot of people are like, this is bad. Why aren't people doing something about it? And rather than just letting it end there, I think you should look at this data to say there's going to come a time. And for most people, there already is a time where you're going to have to rely on other people, that you may have to be a person to provide assistance to someone to uplift them or give them, offer them safety. Because as it looks like, legislatively speaking, there isn't much to protect people in need. And I think that's another scary realization people probably don't want to make, is that there is a lot more of like relying on each other that we're going to have to be doing.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Like, it, for anybody who's of the just vote, like, variety of Democrats or liberals, like, this is why I think people are frustrated with that answer. Like, that doesn't make sense anymore.
Because we did that how many times in a row?
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about weed.
Hey.
Hey. And we're back. And San Francisco has announced that they're suspending a tax on cannabis to help dispensaries compete with drug dealers, which, Miles, you like weed, right?
Yeah, yeah, I heard of it.
So, I don't know. I find this interesting, like, because it's the, you know, unofficial black market putting pricing pressures on, like, the official market. And I feel like that's happening more and more. Like, we saw the, like, stonks subreddit cause, like, big swings on Wall Street, which isn't exactly the same, but, like, I don't know. It has the similar, like, unofficial moving the official. And it also made me think of the, I saw a sign on, like, the side of the road, which is, you know, that's where we're getting our news from. This is a second rate podcast. So just in case. But it was like, you know how Miles in LA, there's like the signs of like phone number and it's like for,
I buy houses for cash.
Yeah. I buy houses for cash. I'll help you put up your Christmas lights. And like, it's just a big phone number. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see ones that say they will give you cash for diabetes testing strips.
Oh, I've definitely seen a bunch of those. Yeah. Around where I'm at too. Yeah. I can think of one in particular at this, in Revere, Mass, right on the Rotary there. Right?
Yeah. Because they're, you know, cheap to people with some insurance or, you know, cheaper and then criminally expensive to people without. And it seems like the black market is taking advantage or like, you know, filling that need.
Right.
So I don't know. This is more of like a zeitgang. It'd be interesting to hear about other examples of that happening because I feel like it's going to be happening more and more as, you know, financial inequality continues to expand and like the corporate world and, you know, their governmental benefactors or employees, I guess, get more and more out of touch. Like black markets will continue to play a more and more important role, it feels like.
Right. Because like a lot of these, like I know they say they're trying to compete with like illegal drug dealers or like illegal cannabis businesses, which they have those all over California. Those are typically spots that are going, you know, extra legally, not regulated and aren't collecting taxes. So they're usually way cheaper than like the flashy like MedMen dispensary that looks like an Apple store. Because, right. You know, at the end of the day, when you add all those taxes up, it's almost like, wait, weed is more expensive than in when I was like, just buying it from someone else. I mean, the packaging is wonderful. But I know that also to grow legally, I mean, there's a lot of bureaucratic loopholes and fees and licenses to pay for that keep a lot of like sort of old school growers who are like helping the illegal market. It's not helping them transition to a legal business. So you're going to have these other things because people are like priced out of doing business legally. And then on top of it, you see that, you know, there's a cheaper product. Yeah, it's a very familiar thing that I think a lot of people, especially in LA, like buying legal weed for the first time, like it's like really expensive. I didn't
realize. Yeah, I know. I've heard that so many times from people. Yeah.
And yeah. And I mean, but it's funny. This story is being used in so many different ways, like on Fox News. They're like, San Francisco's like the weed robberies are so out of control. They got to stop their cannabis tax and stuff because there have been some like, you know, dispensaries being robbed. I think that happens in many cities that have dispensaries. You know, it's a target with probably a lot of cash and, you know, other goods that you might be able to resell. But it's funny when you search this headline, like the many different dimensions that people are saying. The Fox News, San Francisco crime surge prompts city to suspend cannabis tax to help dispensaries versus drug dealers.
Yeah. I mean, but
it's true. They have to compete with, it is a little bit hard to compete right now, I think.
Yeah. And I feel like this is like one way, the like cutthroat American way of like finding, this is like not that this is dual power in any sense, but it's like there are going to be people finding alternatives to the official way of doing business because that has become so inhumane and just fucked. So unfortunately. It's usually just to like make money.
It never ceases to amaze. I don't know that it's still there, but there's, you know, a pretty big a prison on the Mass Ave kind of Roxbury line called South Bay near mm-hmm. Boston.
Yeah.
And right when kind of when all this stuff was starting over the last few years, you would see kind of right across the street. It's this heavily sort of gentrifying area where they're trying to, you know, where a lot of the homeless services are, where a lot of the methadone stuff is too. And where obviously the city's literally trying to just like kick all those people out and stuff. But I remember seeing the signs for those very big kind of corporate, you know, corporate cannabis, like up there, literally just across the street from the prison. Mm. And I always thought that was just such a like ridiculous yeah. kind of dichotomy yeah. thing there. And as somebody, I've been in recovery myself for about going on 11 years.
Nice, man.
But, you know, as someone who doesn't use cannabis anymore, I'm definitely not one of the like, I support that like wholeheartedly to me as far as like, you know, if it comes to like, hey, you're not trying to do opiates and so you're like using cannabis and stuff, like for by all means, go
yeah.
for it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just generally like rooting for anything where the thing people are doing to, you know, get around whatever like
yeah.
capitalist obstruction there is like actually not hurting anyone. Because,
yeah.
you know, there are definitely other ways people can go about it. And
was it L.A. or was it San Francisco? Forgive me if I am remembering this incorrectly, that decided to retroactively commute the sentences of people that were incarcerated.
San Francisco did it first.
It was San Francisco. Yeah. Okay. Is L.A. doing it as well? Or
so back in September, the D.A. said they were going to dismiss about 60,000 past convictions.
Okay.
And continue to, I think, go through. Because, I mean, I think that was also part of, you know, I think a lot of people pushing for it in the state saying, like, if you're going to do this, like, you have to address all of the people that have been yeah. put in prison. That if it's now legal, then, like, fucking address that. Because yeah. it's been disproportionately affecting people of color. And then now yeah. we look at the people who are primarily profiting off of the legal cannabis industry, and it's not people of color.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about how the right is using Santa Claus to promote guns. This has been a headline over the weekend. Thomas Massey, congressman from Kentucky, posted a family Christmas portrait in which everyone is posed with an assortment of like assault rifles.
Yeah.
And smiling. And it says, Merry Christmas. P.S. Santa, please bring ammo.
Please El Paso. Bring ammo.
Yeah. yeah. Which is cool. God.
No magazines in their gun, in the gun. So maybe that's why they're, maybe they just want to be really safe.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
Safe and direct, you know.
Right. Although yeah. I like how Thomas Massey's holding a fucking M60.
Yeah.
Like, and for my little girl, see, you can't get a big gun here. Hold this Uzi.
Yeah. The like, the
fuck is young this picture?
Woman in the picture is holding an Uzi. Ugh. But El Paso County Sheriff's Office tweeted a photo of Santa Claus applying for a concealed handgun permit. They had to
oh my God.
Run that what back, issue an apology. Yeah, people were like, I don't think the idea of Santa needing a handgun is as uplifting as you think it is.
as right. we had originally envisioned it to yeah. be.
And so they had to be like, our bad. Sorry. Yeah.
I'm surprised the text of that tweet was like, you know how fucked up it is out there, right? Even Santa's trying to get a CCW. This wild, it's the Wild West, folks. Stay strapped. Your local police of force.
EPSO intended to highlight our staff in the concealed handgun permit office, not to be insensitive.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Santa okay. correlates to the month of December, and we thought he would help to recognize our hardworking staff. That's all.
You can just say, thanks to our hardworking staff in our office.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, hey, they know.
Guess who came to receive his concealed handgun permit today?
Yeah.
Was the text that they tweeted with the picture. So this has been, like, a long-term thing, actually. The idea of a gun-toting Santa is, like, pretty deeply entrenched in America's relationship with Christmas. Like, there's this early 20th century ad from a gun manufacturer with Santa holding a, it appears to be a rifle, and told parents that Santa would be speeding over rooftops loaded down with Stevens firearms for the youths of the land. So it's not just like a fun juxtaposition of like this fun Christmas thing with deadly guns that trigger the libs. Like, this is Santa giving kids guns. Like,
oh my right. gosh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the Muslim equivalent, like, you know, after Ramadan or something on Eid. Like, you sometimes, we would traditionally give, I mean, to keep up with American capitalism, yes, we do presents and stuff now, but that's not really what you would do in Pakistan or you know, wherever.
Right.
But like you, there's this thing called Eidi. So you give cash in envelopes. So in my head, I'm thinking like, oh, what are you just giving, little like bullets or whatever? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And then imagine the outrage, right? Because I think a lot of people pointed to the fact that, like, imagine that Christmas photo, but it's a family of color, a Muslim family, a black family. Like, then what are the headlines going to be about that?
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's a guy, John Snyder, who's a gun lobbyist, who would routinely send out Christmas cards featuring Santa brandishing a firearm, threatening burglars, and poised to gun down a dynamite-wielding, quote, terrorist who, for some reason, is attempting to take out a single Christmas tree. Dynamite.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. All right. In 1985, even his supporters were a little bit put off by a card in which Santa kneels next to a slumbering baby Jesus holding a rifle.
Oh, yeah.
And then in 89, he sent out a card featuring the Archangel Michael shooting a drug dealer in an alley lit by the Christmas star.
We were just, I was in Connecticut visiting someone for whatever, it doesn't matter when I was there. And, you know, going to one of these like super America gas station stops or whatever. I'm sure people are familiar with it if you've taken a road trip. And I remember one of the license plates we saw was kind of like that. It was like a family gun thing. And it literally just had like all of the guns from like big to small. It's just like,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
But you look, that guy actually just anthropomorphized his own guns. And he's like, here's my baby Callie. Wow. It's like, sir, that's a revolver.
Is it just like, I guess I was talking about road trips a little bit, but is it just a total, I think it's irreconcilable, right? That whole thing. I don't know, like thinking about all the road trips I've done touring through the country, just especially, you know, when you leave the cities, like, yeah, it's like, it's such a big, this country is such a huge place. And it's like, I don't know, when you're in the middle of like Wyoming or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very specific type of, you know, cognitive, I don't even know what to call it, but I think it's basically that it's one of these like freedoms in quotes that we have, you know, our lives are not actually free in America, even though we define ourselves as like the home of the free. And it's like, this is one of the freedoms that they have like grafted their, you know, identity as Americans onto, because, you know, and there's probably part of them that recognizes that, well, the fact that you work for a corporation that doesn't care if you live or die, and that you need to work for them to avoid dying because of like the way health insurance works in this country, like they probably recognize that that's not actually like a free society. So like that's where I think the just outright kind of mania around this comes from, and kind of the inability to recognize like why people would be offended or like put off by this.
I remember, I mean, not too long ago, we had there was like a birthday thing for my wife, who, again, she's from Nashua, New Hampshire. And, you know, she's pretty like, I don't know, not a fan of guns, but like a friend of hers that was there, just, it wasn't even like he just was like, oh, no, it's just different where we're at. Like, it wasn't even like, it didn't become necessarily like as maybe antagonistic as I would have normally intended it to. Because at that moment, the way that he said it, he was like, yeah, you know, we have two kids at home. We got a couple of guns. And no, everybody has guns on our block. But like in that moment, even saying this now, like, I can't believe I didn't say. But at that time, I just was like, oh, it's just a different way of being. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
different people have different relationships to weapons, you know, especially there's the people who, like, there's white people who are living in fear of like a brown America, and 100%. That's a motivator.
Yeah.
You have a lot of minorities who realize, I'm not sure law enforcement will protect me. Right. So I see no reason to just look at these maniacs who are, you know, gooned up with guns and wait for a law enforcement agency that I'm not really entirely sure will protect me. That drives another one. I think so that everyone has so many roads towards it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like to the point of like, I think people swap out their lack of freedom with just saying, well, like, at least I can have a gun.
Yeah. Mm.
And like, if it all goes to hell, the gun will make things better. If I have no health insurance, I can go. I've seen a movie where a dad used a gun to get their kid like treatment at a hospital.
Oh, yeah. What movie is that?
I don't know, but I remember seeing that.
I feel like that was a movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Like with a big time actor, not like.
Right.
A,
it's like, I think the.
Not produced by Ben Shapiro.
Right. The moral of this is that, like, see what. Like, that's an actual lack of recourse that is driving people to certain directions. And I think that's what's really frightening, too, is that rather than being fixated on whether or not you can have guns, like, really sort of try and understand the stresses that you're experiencing, because it might not just be this boogeyman that you've made up in your head to sort of
or you got the dude who's on the street next to me who has that fucking terrorist hunting permit 911-01 sticker on his truck.
Right.
You know, and I when I go for runs and I pass that thing, like what am I supposed to, I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your neighbor.
Oh yeah.
Holy
oh, yeah,
shit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a actually in our town over the summer. This was not a story, man, in the news. Like, it may have been for 24 hours. There was a 28-year-old PhD student named Nathan Allen who stole a plumber's truck with the intention, we found out later, of crashing it into the Jewish temple that's at the end of our street. He didn't make it there. He crashed into, like, a house. He got out of the truck with a like, whatever, handgun. He, like, and he didn't have shoes on or something, and he, like, and this is 2 p.m. on like a Saturday. He walked past everybody else, shot and killed the only two black people that were like on the street corner where I like go for runs all the time. And then like the, you know, and they later found like a backpack with guns and ammo. And like he basically who knows what the hell he was going to do. But this was like a white supremacist terrorist attack in Winthrop, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And like. It was my parents here in where I'm sitting in Billerica didn't even like hear about it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the, again, it's always part of like a pattern we see in the news is to say like when there are like clear hate attacks that are perpetrated by white people, it's they'll find many reasons to either cover it very in a such a nebulous way that you're missing the point or just in a very reduced way because it, you know, it doesn't feed into, I think, what a lot of American people think white terrorism could be.
Yeah. And just back to the gun thing, there's this like trend apparently very popular of staging photo ops at gun clubs where kids can get their picture taken with Santa while holding an instrument of mass death. Like it'll be interesting to see how the Michigan school shooter and his parents being on trial for manslaughter, like, will these people, like, come to their defense because they bought their kid a gun and, like, that's basically what they're on trial for? Like, I don't know.
It's kind of a weird one because there's a lot of mistakes along the way. And I think they'll just point to, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what they start saying. But, and I think just this whole Santa thing, it's just kind of funny because it just made me realize, like, even in I Think You Should Leave, Tim Robinson, there was a whole fucking bit about Santa being a gun-toting, like, action murdering cop.
Yeah. Well, Santa plays a gun-toting murdering cop. Okay. He's not actually Miles. It's like, that's, it's,
right,
like,
cosmic gumbo, right?
It's kind of a cosmic gumbo, the way that he, he inhabits the role. You'll forget it's Santa when you're watching the movie. It's actually pretty.
Don't refer to me as Santa, okay? I'm a fucking actor. It is a theme.
Yeah. Well, Shah Jahan, it's been such a pleasure having you on TDZ.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Where can people find you and follow you?
You can find me at Shahjistan, Shahjistan on Instagram. I just made a Twitter. It's not very good. I mean, you can go there if you want. You can also find me at shahjahanchan.com. And please subscribe to our series, King of the World.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere you get podcasts.
Do it. Go now.
Right now.
Right now. We'll wait. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
I actually there's this tweet by my friend Tarun. He's a kind of a prolific electronic musician out in Vancouver. And lately what he's been doing, I'm sure you guys seem like you use the internet from time to time. Maybe you've seen this where people put like sensors, I'm putting it in the chat here, on plants and like make music out of like the signals that they get from plants. It's super nerdy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's
so he like threw some stuff, this particular one, I think he put him on a couple mushrooms and just like turned it into some like weird, crazy shit. So
wow,
he's an awesome dude, Tarun. He's out in Vancouver. He started this band Delhi to Dublin and stuff, and really cool guy.
That's so super dope. Yeah, we'll link off to that in the footnotes.
I like that.
Awesome. You know, it was nice and peaceful. It's been a fucking crazy ass year. So I was just zoning out to some mushroom plant music.
Yeah.
Miles, where can people find you? Is there a tweet you've been enjoying?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, and also the other show, 420 Day Fiance, where, you know, I talk about 90 Day Fiance and weed too, with Sophie Alexandra.
Yeah, yeah.
Some tweets I like. First one is from at Solo Death One. It says, nothing in life will radicalize a person faster than a medical diagnosis in America, which is true. We see a lot of memes on the internet, too, of people getting like bills and just posting their medical bills to like help people understand, like, yeah, I had a panic attack and now I could have bought a fucking Maserati. So what the fuck is this? Another one is from at The Hype with 4 Y's, tweeted, so did you make her come? Nah, man, I don't make women do anything. I'm not controlling.
All right.
Sorry.
And you were taking your love of all things reality TV to the stage.
To the stage. Soon, right? Coming to the stage. Yes, exactly. On December 9th, this Thursday, going to be doing a Will You Accept This Rose live show. You might recognize people like Gareth Reynolds or Paget Brewster or Carl Tart. There as we compete for Arden Marine's heart. And you can get tickets at Moment House. So look for the Will You Accept This Rose link there. We'll have it in the footnotes. So, you know, come through, watch it. It's going to be, yo, like Anna has put in work. It's going to be a production. Okay. Yeah. It's going to be all kinds of bits, segments, coverage. You're going to love it. So come check us out and come see me in a very interesting outfit.
And I will be there talking shit in the comment section. In the chat. You're like, where's Jack? Why? What's going on?
Why is at Jack O'Brien keep saying, where's Jack? You're like, dude, change your handle if you're going to troll.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Kylie Brakeman tweeted me signing a PDF document. This is exactly like the TV show Succession.
Like DocuSign?
Yeah, exactly. Power. I identified with that. Oh, Jan McNabb. Our writer, Jay McNabb, tweeted, podcasters, please stop pausing to collect your thoughts. It makes me think I'm getting a phone call. That's just good advice. I get a little, my heart rate rises a little bit. Every time there's like just dead air, I'm like, uh-oh, someone's calling.
I'm getting a text.
I have to talk to a real person and not just stay bathed in a parasocial relationship. Oh, and Trash Jones tweeted, I live in constant fear of being asked to share a fun fact about me. I think that's about right. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Okay, this is a really interesting, like, reggae dub sort of remix of Erykah Badu's On and On by this artist called Red Astaire. and it's funny because if you look at the album cover, it looks like a Red Stripe beer label, but it says Red Astaire. But this is Red Astaire with Rolling Stone. And it's just kind of dope when you, it's just, I love hearing mashups like that where the vocals like absolutely work, even though if it's a little like forward thinking, but you're like, oh shit, this goes.
Did you ever see the mashup of Vanessa Carlton with Rage Against the Machine filling in the name?
Yes. That's the one that haunts me.
Yeah, yeah, it does. They didn't even change the pitch.
No.
Perfect. It's perfect. Right.
Yeah. Shout out to her.
All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or, you know, wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Yes. That's going to do it for today's episode. But we are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending. And we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.